Wednesday night on the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a 90-minute show for us here on Sportsnet. And then the following half hour at the very end, we'll be teeing up Atlanta and Toronto. Raptors back in action. A four-game homestand. It's going to be an important one. They got the Hawks again and again. We got some trade rumors with Pascal Siakam in the Hawks, which is not an unfamiliar thing floating around. We're going to unpack all that with Frank Isola around 6:30, and we're going to talk about his buddy Tommy DeVito in New York. We got lots to go through with him. Smith and Jones at 7 o'clock as well. They'll be from Scotiabank Arena to help tee up tonight's game. Jeff Merrick Monday is now Jeff Merrick Wednesday this week, so he'll join us shortly. We had Connor versus Connor, part one, last night. One of the Connors won. And we'll have the new All-Star Game skills competition format release. Lots to discuss.
Which a Connor might win.
Which a Connor might win. Odds are, if you name your son Connor, they might be good at hockey. But before we get to Jeff, just like a little tidbit on the Raptors game tonight. Because it's been a little while since the Raptors were home. Been a while since we had a big Raptors discussion. They're 9-14. They're playing a team that's eerily similar to them tonight in the Atlanta Hawks. But a lot of trade rumors now picking up again because the Raptors are not in a spot where we're really sure, which is not an uncommon sentence to say, but which direction they'll be going in the free agent market or the trade market kind of unofficially opens in about 2 days.
Yeah, the trade market opening because of, you know, we've gone past the period where, you know, guys who sign can stay or at least have the certainty to stay within that market until this point. And it's fitting that the Raptors and Hawks have a back-to-back set here, because if anyone was interested in Pascal Siakam over the summer,
it was them.
It was pretty much just the Atlanta Hawks. So getting to see them twice in a row as this window opens will definitely, if it's not already there, spark the Pascal Siakam trade discussion once again.
Yeah, there was a great article from Shams at The Athletic really about the Raptors and the market around Pascal Siakam and OG. So we can get into that a little later in the show. The second half will basically be a big pregame for your Toronto Raptors on the start of their four-game homestand. Okay, let's bring in Jeff Merrick on a Wednesday. It's a weird one. Jeff, thanks for joining us. I saw you're all fancy tonight with like a suit jacket. Like, you're looking all sharp.
I thought I'd clean it up for you a little bit. I haven't dragged a razor across my face, but I respect you too. So, you know, I threw on the nice collared shirt and a jacket. You know, it's respect for my friends. I like you in pink. That's a nice that's a nice look. You know, it's very,
go team
very,
go.
Very fetching.
This is the
very
middle
fetching,
of the week. We got to spice things up, right? Okay, so
right.
Connor versus Connor last night, part one.
Yeah.
Man, what a treat it is to watch those two. I know we were saying like, 100%. One might be the succeeder, one might be the challenger of the throne one day, but the first edition of Connor versus Connor, what were your thoughts?
Okay, so there was kind of like a big dog, little dog thing kind of going on there, and after Bedard scored that goal, which was gorgeous, under the triangle, top shelf, like just looked fantastic, it's almost as if McDavid didn't want to go out of his way, I don't think, to try to play the one-up street ball game with Connor Bedard. I don't think he wanted to do that, but I really do think he wanted to show who the big dog was. I mean, ultimately, Edmonton wins this one, and they should have, and they did, and McDavid ends up with two assists. But there was one very specific moment in the game. It was right at the end of the first period. It was a Chicago rush, and McDavid is back-checking, and he beelines to Connor Bedard. And, you know, they're trying to, of course, everything sort of, you know, funnels through 98. They're trying to funnel a pass to him and try to get something in front of the net. And McDavid wraps him up. Probably could have got called hooking, interference, holding, I don't know, pick your penalty. But it was kind of Ailish. It was kind of like McDavid was saying, yeah, not on my watch, kid. Like, we're not having any of that. And it kind of reminded me of game one of the season, Chicago Blackhawks, Pittsburgh Penguins. Do you remember the opening draw?
Oh, yeah.
Was Sidney Crosby and Connor Bedard. And he, Crosby, and you could just tell he'd been thinking about it all summer long. Like,
he was not losing that
schedule.
Draw.
He was not losing that draw. And he just like gobbled it and snapped it back harder than I've ever seen Sidney Crosby win a faceoff. And I kind of got that same vibe from McDavid yesterday. Didn't want to go out of his way. Didn't want to try to force something that wasn't there. But still wanted to show Connor Bedard that if I want to, I can shut you down as well. But listen, this is going to be a lot of fun for a lot of years. I know they're in different divisions, but they're in the same conference. So we're going to see a lot of Connor v. Connor. Bring it on. Bring it on.
Yeah, maybe that was the issue early on. McDavid not seeing enough future and current generational talent. But things have certainly steadied for the Oilers here. 8 straight victories with that win over Chicago. Yeah. We know that McDavid gets a lion's share of the credit here, but of course they made a coaching change. So I don't know if you can put a number on it, but if you were doing the fraction or the score for Chris Knobloch in terms of credit for this turnaround, is it a significant one, a considerable one, or is he just kind of landed at the right spot at the right time?
I think the main thing is Connor McDavid is healthy. But you know what? It's funny because I had Luke Gazdick on this afternoon on the radio show, and you know he was sort of going through the different ways that the Edmonton Oilers under Chris Knobloch are behaving as opposed to how they did certain things when Jay Woodcroft is the coach. So, you know, and Knobloch came in and essentially said, like, look, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel here. We're not going to do anything too profoundly different now in Edmonton. Like, we have our in case of emergency break glass idea, which is always put Connor and Leon together, right? It's not unlike what Chicago used to do when they had to manufacture something and they put Taves and Kane together. Everybody knows what the break glass thing is, and that's put 29 and 97 together. But I think the main thing here is Connor McDavid is healthy. And, you know, I've always sort of described the Oilers this way, and you're seeing it now with a healthy McDavid. You know, there's the bullet, and then there's, you know, and as the bullet travels, there's a little vacuum right behind it, and that's the rest of the Oilers. And McDavid is the bullet, and he pulls everybody along into the game. Now, I'll throw one back at you guys, because Elliot and I talked about this a couple times, and at first we kind of laughed it off a little bit, but the more that I think about it, I kind of maybe think that it's true. Have you guys heard the jersey tuck conspiracy?
No. What do you mean? Has somebody switched their jersey? Okay. Like, oh, I used to do this. If I wasn't scoring, I'd go from like black tape to white tape. So maybe I'm on to something.
Yeah. Maybe change the color of your laces. Yes. Maybe instead of dressing left to right, you go right to left, a different route to the rink. Like, I know we all have done goofy things. You at a more elite level than me and Justin, but that's fine. No. So when McDavid came back, for the Heritage Classic, we all knew that he was coming back too early. Mm. Like, it was pretty obvious to everybody. Like, this guy is not at 100%. Is he at 90? No. Is he at 80? No. Is he at 70? No. Like, when do we stop here? But McDavid's always been a jersey tuck player. Like, not unlike Gretzky, for example. He's always been a jersey tuck guy. So McDavid comes back, and he's not tucking his jersey.
Mm.
His jersey's out. Now, here's the theory on it. That he had his jersey untucked because he was wearing protection that he needed to cover his injury. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Connor McDavid got healthy again. Now you have a look at it last night against Chicago. Mm. The jersey tuck is back. And we're not going to find out maybe till the end of the season, or maybe we're never going to find out ever. But, I mean, you two guys know how much I love the minutiae of hockey. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is now my new white whale. I'm trying to find out if this is true, right? Yeah. This is my new obsession. Did he have like sort of extra padding on the jersey? I don't know. Is it an oblique? I don't know. But did he have padding to try to protect the injury while he was recovering?
I love that.
So there's
that
your jersey
theory.
Tuck conspiracy.
I do like that around. A lot. We've had some tinfoil hat conspiracies here with the Blue Jays for the last week, so we can focus it on Edmonton instead. Okay, we were talking about Connor McDavid. I wonder for you how the new change for the All-Star competition, I know it's like kind of spearheaded from McDavid, but how did this all start? Was it the players saying we need to change something, this isn't working for us, or kind of like an in tandem with the NHL to make this new All-Star weekend, which is going to be here in Toronto, which is going to be awesome, a little bit different? Yeah.
It's in tandem. NHL and Connor McDavid had a big part of it. But you know where it really started? So the All-Star game last year and the All-Star weekend last year in Sunrise.
It was tough.
The skills part of it was real. Was a real tough watch. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a real... Now, but there's a very specific reason for that one. That was run by marketing, and that was run by television. That's what the entertainment side of the NHL wanted to present. Everything had a showbiz element to it. Now, first of all, it didn't come off great, but I'll never criticize a group or a person for trying something different. It's okay. It didn't work. Okay, well, that's fine. Take what worked and move on. You know, the idea, like, I don't believe in being sort of overly critical of people trying different things, because that's what moves things forward. And, you know, dogs don't bark at parked cars, so you try something different, people are going to bark about it, blah, blah, blah. It didn't work. But you know what that provided, guys? That provided Hockey Ops the opportunity to grab the skills competition again. Mm. Like, that went and was received so poorly last year that Hockey Ops was able politically within the NHL to walk in and say, okay, hand this thing back to us now. Like, this has to be hockey first, entertainment second. And I like what they've done.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to bring one thing up here in a second about it. But I do like this idea of, and I know the field is smaller. We're not going to have a whole bunch of people doing hardest shot and fastest skaters. Sorry, hockey fans that wanted to see your guy wind up as hard as he can. But I like this idea of, you know, 12 players going through, doing all these different events, and then it sort of funnels down to one, and there's a $1 million prize at the end. That is compelling because there's a story there. And it's not just, you know, this field of six that's competing against each other to take shots, but it's a number of different skills. That's interesting to me. Like, I really like that. But I was talking about this afternoon, and I got off the air and I grabbed my phone. I got a text from an agent who brought up a really good point. And he said, why is it only the players that get to compete for $1 million? Are goalies not
we
valuable
just had this
enough
chat
to
too.
Have their own event for $1 million? Where are the goaltenders in all of this one here? And really, when it comes down to it, like, that position is the one that if you're a manager of a team, an owner of a team, a coach of a team, a teammate of the goaltender, like, that's the one position where you don't want your player to go. Like, the only people that are getting injured at All-Star Weekend are the goalies, because they're the only ones that work hard. They get no protection out there. They're still up and down and back and forth, and shots are getting blasted at them. No one's blocking the shot. No one's taking care of rebounds. These are the guys that are still working hard. Like, if I'm running an NHL team, I'm begging, please don't take my goalie. We know the forwards aren't going to get injured. We know the defensemen aren't going to get injured. Please don't touch my goaltender, because I have some designs on the playoffs, please. Anyway, I just like mentioning goaltenders as much as I can.
Yeah.
And as much as the accent is on offense right now, these guys are the ones that work on the weekend.
They're definitely the forgotten ones in this. I actually wouldn't be surprised if they had kind of dummy goalies, not really a string, like, you know, the shooter tutors on the goalposts for this.
But
you could have just E-Bugs wearing white, so they're as anonymous as they get, and you don't have goaltenders that make this event, you know, bending over backwards trying to make saves.
Like the hockey player, I know I'm dating myself here, like the hockey players from Strange Brew, the Stormtrooper send-offs. Am I dating myself?
You might
here?
Be a bit. You might be a bit.
Maybe before me, they're a little bit.
Did I just create a generation gap?
I think you did, Merrick. But let's pull it back in. How surprised were you that $1 million is on the line? A cool $1 million from the NHL being dangled in front of a group of 12 players. Like, that was the most stunning thing out of all of this for me.
Yeah. Can I let you in on a little secret?
Sure.
Players don't really like going to the All-Star Weekend.
This will help.
A lot of them. So I think you really need to make it worth their while. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there was even some discussion last year about creating a sort of rotation of places that are favorable to players in order to lure them there. Whether it was, well, you saw Sunrise last year, Tampa, Vegas, Dallas. Because, you know, All-Star Weekend rolls around and the superstars go to wherever the event is being held. And everybody else goes south and sits on a beach and sends all their buddies from their team that are playing in All-Star Weekend shots of them on a boat, on the beach, at the bar, in the pool, playing volleyball, all this. And it's like, yeah, thanks, gonna go do fastest skater now while you're stirring drinks
and doing 32 nice thoughts
somewhere down south. And so I'm not surprised by it, but what do you think about this for an idea? I say this half tongue-in-cheek, but knowing full well that, you know, these guys would really go for it. Instead of the $1 million, and that's great for this competition, that's fine, half it goes to the player, half of it goes to their charity of choice. How about the winning team from the All-Star Weekend? Those players don't pay escrow. If you want to get a competitive game of hockey, put escrow on the table. They will knock their grandmothers down an icy road if they don't have to pay escrow.
Might be a little cutthroat. You're talking no injuries. There might be some. You'd see goalies sliding out on breakaways like last night. You'd see a lot of chaos.
It is interesting, though, Merrick.
Shedkoff,
It's interesting, Merrick, that they're incentivizing the skills comp over, and I guess there's still money on the line for the actual game, but they're prioritizing the skills competition there. Is that just because of what you mentioned? They got to transfer, hey, we got this power back at Hockey Ops, or is there something more to
that? Yes. No, I first of all, I think, you know, the charity component of it, I think, is a big one here. And I think that's, you know, legitimate and that's fantastic. I think it's, you know, like the best way to lure someone into doing something is money. I mean, we're all the same. We're no different than the hockey players. You know, what's a great line from Monty Burns of The Simpsons? You know, from The Simpsons, I have fame, I have wealth, I have riches beyond my wildest dreams, but I'd give it all up for just a little bit more. Like, everyone is essentially the same, and hockey players really aren't that different. But I do think this is – I think it makes a headline as well, that they're competing for something for themselves, and there's no escrow. And this is the cleanest check. Like, any of these players, whoever wins this thing, it's the cleanest check that player's going to get all year long. Like, you look at it, and there's no escrow taken off. Like, this is wonderful. This is heaven. This is, you know, carefree, halcyonic days of azure skies of deep summer. This is beautiful. So I think part of it is, you know, to help lure the players and make them feel good about themselves. B, to increase competition so they really try. And I think C, as a way that Hockey Ops has now sort of wrestled this thing back. I think Hockey Ops wants to keep this and not sort of seed all the different ideas to marketing and television.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm so excited that it's in our city too, so we get to go experience it for the first time.
It's going to be cool, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be really great. We're chatting with Jeff Merrick, of course, of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Okay, let's get to some newsworthy items. Craig Berube fired today by the St. Louis Blues. But I think a lot of people are drawing the conclusion that maybe it's just the roster just simply might not be the issue here. Another coach fired this season. Yeah. We're at 3 or 4, I believe. But this latest one, what's the real issue with the St. Louis Blues?
Not good enough. Mm-hmm. The issue, like, I always look at coach firings and I always ask myself one very simple question. And that is the situation this team finds itself in, is it a question of composition or coaching? And when it comes to the St. Louis Blues, this is a question of composition. And this isn't recent. Like, this isn't new. Like, there are some missteps along the way of recent note. You know, last year when the St. Louis Blues picked up Jacob Vrana and then signed... Who did they sign? Kasperi Kapanen. Hmm. All of a sudden, that was the almost to the dollar. That was the exact money that it would have taken to bring Ryan O'Reilly back after he went and played with Toronto and was going to become a free agent. But instead, they prioritize Vrana, who was on waivers and has cleared waivers and is on his way to the American Hockey League now, and Kasperi Kapanen, who's had some high-profile challenges, let's just say, some high-profile challenges with the St. Louis Blues. So that hasn't exactly worked. But the whole thing, you know when the whole thing began? Like, if you want to trace, you know, from the root to the fruit here, the whole thing began when the St. Louis Blues general manager, Doug Armstrong, had the contract negotiations with Alex Pietrangelo. And the St. Louis Blues held firm on not giving a no-move clause. And here's someone, it's your captain, who helped bring you a Stanley Cup. First Stanley Cup in the history of the St. Louis Blues organization, who, as we know, stretches back to 1967 when the league doubled from 6 to 12. And all he wanted to do was remain a St. Louis Blue. His wife is from St. Louis, family very happy, wanted his roots to get even deeper, wanted to spend his entire career there. And that was his indication. Like, look, I'm sincere here. I want to stay in St. Louis. I've done this. I've earned this. I'm on the precipice of becoming an unrestricted free agent. The one thing that's really important to me here is I need to be guaranteed that I can stay in St. Louis. And you know, they picked up Justin Falk before that as Pietrangelo insurance. But then after they let Pietrangelo go, it seemed as if Doug Armstrong, you know, sort of went to the marketplace and said, okay, now we need to grab a bunch of players that all did various things that Alex Pietrangelo used to do for us. So here comes Torrey Krug. Here comes Nick Leddy. Okay, we've grabbed the defenseman from the Bruins. We've grabbed a defenseman from the Islanders. We already got Justin Falk from the Carolina Hurricanes. Maybe if you put them all together, you know, individually, they each sort of replicate some of the things that Alex Pietrangelo used to do instead of just having Alex Pietrangelo. You know, that's the beginning of the sort of the tugging of the thread on the sweater that led to this unraveling, which culminated last night after a loss against the Detroit Red Wings with Craig Berube losing his job. But I think we go all the way back to the Pietrangelo situation. And now Pietrangelo's got not one but two Stanley Cups in his hip pocket, and we're having the Hall of Fame question about the defenseman.
Yeah, it's amazing how much things can change or even go back to where they were. We're 5 years removed from the Blues, you know, trending towards rock bottom before making the move and then going on that run, winning the Stanley Cup in 2019. It seems like it's so far away now. Okay, Wednesday night hockey tonight, Montreal hosts Pittsburgh. That's always an interesting one for Sidney Crosby, but it reminded me of a conversation we had yesterday with Frank Saravalli about the futures of Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby. Clearly, from an individual level, Sid's fine. Sid's still productive. Sid's going really, really well. Ovi, not so much, stumbling a little bit on this pursuit of Wayne Gretzky's record. But considering both of them, where their teams are at, where they are at, do you think there's a day where one of those two players plays for another team?
I can't see it. Like, this July 1st, I expect there to be an announcement of a contract extension for Sidney Crosby with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think the only other team that Alex Ovechkin would play for would be Dynamo in the KHL. Like, I don't think there's another NHL team that Alex Ovechkin is going to play with. I think that, you know, for the longest time, we've always assumed that before Ovechkin's career is over, he's going to play at least 1 year in the KHL and then retire in that league instead of retiring in the National Hockey League. You know, I think one of the interesting things about both of them is their entire careers, considering what they meant to those organizations, they were horrendously underpaid. Mm. Like, you could double both of their paychecks and still they wouldn't make as much money as they're actually worth to the Washington Capitals and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, the Crosby playing with the Pittsburgh Penguins absolutely saved that franchise, saved the organization, got the new rink. The Washington Capitals, we tend to all forget just how bad they were, you know, and what they had to do to even try to get in a position to get Alex Ovechkin, and how no one was going to the games or everybody was dressed up as an empty seat. Like, it was bad. And then Alex Ovechkin arrives, and that's the coolest ticket in the NHL. And Sidney Crosby arrives, and all of a sudden, right away, we're talking about, okay, how many Stanley Cups is he going to win? How many Hart trophies is he going to win? How quickly can he get to the Hockey Hall of Fame? I think that they've added so much to the bottom line and made so many people rich along the way that those two, like, honestly, they may be in the history of hockey. And I know this includes a lot of players like Jean Beliveau and Rocket Richard and Gordie Howe, whose salaries were artificially depressed as well for a number of other reasons. But I don't know if there are two players in the history of the game, considering how much they made for their organization, that were more underpaid than Alex Ovechkin and Sidney Crosby.
Well, I mean, Ovi did say that they saved the NHL, and I think you're laying it out perfectly why that could be the case. Jeff, we're up against the clock, so we'll let you go. But nice to have a Merrick Wednesday once in a while. It was nice to switch things up. We'll see you next week, though.
Yeah, sure. Okay, we'll talk in 5 days.
There we go. All right, thanks, Jeff. Have a good night.
Bye, guys.
Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Of course, we are up against the clock, so let's send some picks into the universe. Time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. I am going to that Wednesday night hockey game, Pittsburgh and Montreal. I'm going to bet Sidney Crosby 2+ goals tonight. That is plus 650. Father Time has not slowed him down much this season, and it's his old favorite team. So I want to show him up tonight.
I'm going to the Raptors game, Hawks in Toronto tonight. The Hawks play games that just go over totals with absolute regularity. They just, like, can't play defense, and they score a lot themselves. They're kind of like the poor man's Pacers. Just it's like, you know, it's just not Tyrese Halliburton. It's Trae Young instead. But that doesn't mean they can't fill the basket, and I think they will tonight. So I'm just going to go for a high-scoring game, but go for the aggressive pick. The highest scorer on each team goes above their alt over, rather. I'm going Trae Young over 32.5 points, plus Pascal over 28.5 points, couple 30-point efforts from them, plus 800.
All right, that was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Lots of Raptors come. They're on in 1 hour. We're going to chat with Frank Isola after the break on the Fan Pregame.
breaking down the top stories in hockey, and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin. The Raptors start a very important four-game homestand with two in a row against the Atlanta Hawks, a team that's kind of like their mirror image right now. A lot of rumors floating around about those Raptors needing to make a pivot or a directional change. Tell me if you've heard that one before. It's like a broken record sometimes around these parts. But tonight, hopefully we'll start a little bit of a good run for them because they got to make some big decisions about which direction they want to go.
Yeah, and to talk a bit about that and more, let's bring in our next guest, Frank Asola of Yes Network, ESPN, and Sirius XM. Thanks for jumping on with us, Frank.
How you folks doing?
We're doing pretty good, but we don't have a story. I mean, we had Shohei. The Shohei watch was fun while it lasted and a little bit tormenting at the end. But I think in New York, you guys got the story of the sports world right now with Tommy DeVito owning New York. Is that been the refreshing thing? We just talked about how stale this Raptors story is. Tommy DeVito being that thrown into the news cycle, it's got to be fun.
Yeah, and he lives like a town over from me, living with his parents. But I haven't seen him around town, but it has been fun. You know, I mean, I think they've now basically every Italian stereotype, they've stretched them as far as they could. The media has, certainly some of the fans have. But I guess it's all in good fun. It's brought some excitement to the Giants. That Monday night game, you know, good for him, good for his family. Anytime a local guy does good, you guys deal with it in basketball and hockey sometimes. So it's a really cool story. It's funny, too, because if you look both the Jets and the Giants, not only have they been bad this year, they've both been pretty boring. And, you know, over the course of 24 hours, you had Zach Wilson had a terrific game and then Tommy DeVito. And it just turns out that both of them ended up being conference offensive player of the week for their respective conferences. So there you go. Maybe New York football is officially back, at least for a couple of days.
It might be saved. Is there more than just cult hero status on the line here for Tommy DeVito? Like, could you see something? I'm not saying he's going to be the next Peyton Manning here, but do you see at least a serviceable quarterback year in the long term?
Well, I mean, could he be the next Brock Purdy? I mean, no one thought that Brock Purdy was going to be that guy. And, you know, you had Jimmy Garoppolo, who went to a Super Bowl, much more accomplished than Daniel Jones was, and it didn't work. You know, they end up getting rid of him, the backup quarterback. They end up trading to Dallas. So he's got a chance. And you don't know about Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones already has neck surgery once already in the league. Yeah, he takes a big-time beating. So I think Tommy DeVito will get a chance to keep proving himself. You know, when he was at Syracuse, he put up pretty decent numbers. Then he went to Illinois. I think it was just for 1 year and didn't do a bad job either. So, I mean, there's no question he has ability. The weird thing is if you go back to the first game that he played, they put him in against the Jets, and essentially they didn't let him throw the ball. That part was a little bizarre. So I think everything that he's doing now, I think people look at it, you know, kind of through the same lens as they did his first, you know, game with the Giants where he didn't throw. Now he's throwing, he's running. He didn't get sacked in the last game against the Packers, and you guys know how it works. It's one thing to win, but when you win at home in a nationally televised game in the manner in which the Giants did, your cult hero status – or I guess it's a cutlet status because what they call Tommy Cutlets up here in New York.
That's so great. It's good to have a feel-good story. The Raptors would love one of those. Last six of their last seven games, the coach is promising to take them to dinner if they can win three straight games. Like, we've sunk to that level.
That might be the cutlet curse right there.
They need some cutlet. So what's wrong with the Raptors when you look from an outside perspective? Because we're kind of right in the muck, right? We need to zoom out and get a national perspective on how you're viewing the Toronto Raptors.
Well, I mean, they definitely have some talented players. I don't think their shooting is very good. But, you know, you look at some of the players, if you go back to, you know, losing Kawhi Leonard in free agency, don't get anything back for him, and then you lose a guy like Fred VanVleet, you're taking away a lot of talent, but you're also taking away a lot of toughness as well and big game toughness. So I agree with what you said before. I think both the Atlanta Hawks and the Toronto Raptors are kind of in the same boat. You know, if they make the playoffs, chances are they would all be, you know, in the play-in tournament, which isn't easy. That's, you know, one game and your season is over. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens around the trade deadline because you keep hearing Pascal Siakam's name, obviously. you hear OG Anunoby. I think it's the same thing with the Chicago Bulls and the players that they have. I don't think Atlanta is ready to do anything that crazy. Remember, they made a big move last year to bring in Quinn Snyder, but they haven't played well, and you could tell that Trae Young is upset. You know, a couple of games ago against the Brooklyn Nets, he didn't get a call late in the game. He complained about the officiating. Then the last game that they played in, he complained enough with the officials, kicked him out of the game.
Yeah, the Pascal Siakam rumors are definitely where I wanted to go next, especially with the Hawks in town. Like, they've had some discussions over the summer, and now the unofficial trade deadline or trade opening is in a couple days here. So do you think the Raptors should be looking or will be looking to move Pascal Siakam? Is that the right time for it? Has the league maybe cooled off on the Pascal that we knew as the big, bright future for the Toronto Raptors? Or is there still an opportunity for Masai to land something of caliber for the Toronto Raptors moving forward?
And it's amazing, too, if you go back to game one of the NBA Finals, how well Pascal Siakam played. And he's had some very good moments. There's no question about that. I think it all comes down to what you can get for him. And, you know, is he a guy, can he get you a couple of first-round picks? I'm not so sure about that. But it's really, I think the Raptors, it's tough. You're in that position when you don't know, do we want to attempt to start over and maybe, you know, get some draft picks and we suck it up for maybe a year or two, or do we keep trying to add? I still think that Masai is one of those guys. I think he's pretty aggressive. I still think that he wants to win, but they're just in I mean, look at the division itself. You know, look at Boston and look at Philadelphia. They're not in the neighborhood of either of those teams. The Knicks have now surpassed Toronto, and the Brooklyn Nets have as well. So forget about the conference, even the division, they're just not good enough. So they're going to have some tough decisions to make between now and the trade deadline. If I were them, I would start thinking of trading off. I'll have no problem trading anybody, but I have to make sure I get a good deal.
Yeah, it feels like with the Raptors and Masai Ujiri and Pascal Siakam, it's like they're waiting for the perfect moment to move him. And while they've done that, I think the belief that he could be a dominant number two or at least a two on a title contender has completely fizzled. And for that reason, it just feels like no one's going to be happy when and if this return or the trade even happens. So we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, there's still a potential extension in play for Pascal Siakam, but it feels like it's getting to the point where the true value or the perceived value that once was just won't be out there anymore. But the Raptors do have a player that for sure would provide value to a championship contender, and that's OG Anunoby. OG has a little bit more power, it seems, than Pascal Siakam right now, and I think it's more of a threat level right now with OG and the Raptors. Do you see an OG trade happening before the end of the season? Do you see teams around the league ponying up for a guy who can really change the way you play defense?
Well, you guys know the way it works. I mean, teams look at struggling teams, and they look at a guy like OG Anunoby, and of course they'd love to have him. Really what they're trying to do is steal him and see if they can get Toronto to be desperate and make a move that's not going to benefit Toronto in the long term. So you know that there are teams calling about OG Anunoby. He's a terrific player. My favorite is the idea that the Knicks, you know, have always kind of liked OG Anunoby. Something tells me that the New York Knicks, who are right now involved in litigation with the Toronto Raptors, are going to be able to get a guy like OG Anunoby. But I think, you know, he certainly could help teams. I mean, you look at a team like Milwaukee, and, you know, you keep waiting for them to figure it out with Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. But defensively, you know, they're not very good. They're a team that could be primed to add somebody. The only problem is, though, you look up and down their roster, you know, who would you really want? You know, they have enough assets to make a trade because they just traded a lot of assets in order to get Damian Lillard. So it's a tough call. I do think guys like if Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby were made available, and I would think chances are they would only trade one. I'm not so sure. Both would go. I don't think that Masai Ujiri would be running out of suitors for either player.
We'll chat more Raptors at 7 o'clock with Smith and Jones. We've got the Hawks in town to face the Raptors 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet 1. But another big game in the NBA tonight. The big three finally in action for the Suns, Booker, Durant, and Beal. So, well, we'll see. There's an asterisk. We'll just make sure that Durant is definitely in or not. But if it is tonight, how excited are we to finally see this little trio actually hit the court together, and what should we expect?
And it's funny about Kevin Durant because he sat last night. Mm-hmm. That for a home game, knowing that he has a home game tonight against his former team, the Brooklyn Nets. And he probably figured I can't play in both, so if I play in one, I'll play in the net game. It'll be interesting to see how it works out with Bradley Beal. The biggest issue with Bradley Beal, everyone knows that he's talented, but he's been dealing with a lot of injuries over the last couple of years. And you know the way it works in basketball. You hear that a guy has a sore knee, you figure, there's a way to figure that out. It may be a foot injury. Whenever they start talking about a back, And he was out for a while. And, you know, you mentioned with Kevin Durant play tonight, it'll be interesting to see if Bradley Beal will be available. You know, is he his first time back in a few weeks? He's going to play back-to-back games. I don't know about that. But right now, Phoenix has been a little disappointing, but they certainly have ability. I mean, I got to see basically every one of Kevin Durant's games when he played here in Brooklyn. And, you know, you see him on a nightly basis. Everybody knows that he's great. But you really appreciate just how good he is, how unselfish he is. You know, but he's another guy. You know, go to basketballreference.com and go through, you know, his games over the last few years. He always ends up getting hurt, and it's usually some kind of leg injury. So I think, you know, I think their window, for the most part, because Durant's getting up there, I think it's kind of a two-year window. And right now, I look in the Western Conference, I just don't see it with them, because I just don't trust a Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant just to stay healthy for the rest of the year.
They weren't available in the in-season tournament, losing to the Lakers, who went on to win it. And, yeah, there was a champagne celebration. A banner will go up. It looked like they clicked into real competitive, maybe NBA Finals-type form, at least while they were playing in Vegas. It was at times impressive. At least Anthony Davis was mightily impressive in that victory over the Indiana Pacers. Could you squint and look at a title contender while you're watching the Lakers win the in-season tournament? Or are they still... you know, when it really comes down to it and teams like the Nuggets are going to be playing at that level, they're still inferior on the outside looking in, at least for the championship tier.
Yeah, you know, you can never count out LeBron, but a lot is going to depend on, you know, are they going to make the top six? If they don't, then they're in the play-in, and then that puts more pressure on LeBron, and then it's a quick turnaround with the first round. You know, he played so well in the playoffs last year up until the Western Conference Finals, and I thought he wore down a little bit. There's no question that, you know, you can consider them a contender, but I'm putting them behind a bunch of teams right now. I just, you know, LeBron, you know, at the end of the month, he's going to be 39. And here's the problem with LeBron. When he misses games, you know, Anthony Davis just doesn't carry the team. That's the guy they need to kind of carry the team during the regular season. But LeBron is still their best player. It says a lot about LeBron, but it's kind of an issue with the Lakers, that Anthony Davis on a night-in, night-out basis, I know he put up good numbers last night. He was great in the NBA Cup final. He played really well, but he just doesn't do it consistently enough.
One thing we need to do is have perspective sometimes in Toronto, because we're, you know, we're kind of complaining about the Raptors, but they're not the Pistons. The Pistons have lost 20 straight games. Like, I actually wonder, like, zooming out, historical view on a team like this. Like, the last time Detroit won a game, the World Series was still going on. It is pretty outstanding what we're seeing with Detroit. I wonder for you, like, how players, how management, how coaching staff, like, show up to the arena every day and actually go through something like this. Like, is there a breaking point? Will they ever win again?
You know, it's crazy, right? You mentioned it. Hey, last time they won was during the World Series. They didn't win in November. And mm-hmm. they actually started the season 2-1. So they went 0 for November. Right now they're 0 for December. And now tonight they get Philadelphia, and then they'll get Philadelphia on the road, followed by Milwaukee, and I think it's Atlanta. So here's the thing, when you've lost that many games in a row, I don't think teams actually take you lightly, because I don't think any team mm-hmm. wants to be the team that helps you win the losing streak. So I thought that they would have a great chance against Indiana. Once Indiana made it to the NBA Cup final, I think you guys know the way the NBA players think. They're in Vegas on a Saturday. That means they flew to Detroit on Sunday. They're downtown Detroit. You just lost this final game. You know, you're not going to be able to necessarily get up for the game. And give Indiana credit. They basically wiped the floor with the Detroit Pistons. You know, Detroit gave Monty Williams all that money. Was it $80 or $85 million? They didn't give him that money to be a lottery team. They gave him that money because they thought that at the very least they would compete for a play-in spot. You know, get maybe 7, 8, 9, or 10, but that's not going to happen. It's really a mess, and their young players are all playing. Mm-hmm. They're just not playing well. The organization has really taken a step back. Right now, they're completely off the map. And if you look at what's going on in San Antonio, I think they're at 17 in a row. And I'm not sure the Wizards have a losing streak, but the Wizards are dreadful. So you have three really dreadful teams in the NBA, and guess what? You don't have Shaquille O'Neal out there. You don't have LeBron James out there. You don't have the next Victor Wembanyama out there. Now, a player could always emerge, but right now it doesn't look like, you know, this is necessarily the year to get the number one overall draft pick. And clearly Detroit, San Antonio, and also Washington are in that boat.
I heard this, and I had to double check it before I brought it to the air, that right now the longest stretch ever for an NBA losing streak is 28. The Detroit Pistons will play game 29 possibly against the Toronto Raptors. So that that doesn't shape out nicely. If all these teams take the Pistons serious for the next eight games and they show up and play the Raptors, I don't even want to be in that situation where we're either winning, beating a team, or we're becoming the longest. It's a tough one for us here in Toronto.
that'd be a tough spot for Toronto.
I agree. And the crazy thing, too, is the reason they came up with this in-season tournament mm-hmm. was to get the players to take the regular season more seriously. Because we know guys kind of, you know, mentally and physically float in and out of the regular season. So you mean to tell me over the last 20 games, they just couldn't catch a team on a bad night and win the game? Yeah. I actually think it's harder now to lose 20 in a row. I just don't think over the course of 20 games, you're going to run into 20 teams that are, you know, ready and ready to play hard and to be focused and be committed. I mean, it really says a lot about the Detroit Pistons right now.
Yeah, the Pistons making losing look easy. The Warriors making losing look really, really difficult to cope with. I think that's one of the stories of the season, the Golden State Warriors suddenly being lesser than, and guys like Draymond Green and Klay Thompson to a lesser extent, I guess, not really knowing how to deal with it. What do you make of the Warriors' decline here and how it's, you know, they're kind of turning, not that everyone is turning on them, but like a lot of the polish, a lot of shine has been knocked off the Warriors here because of this current state that they're in and kind of how guys like Draymond Green are acting out.
Yeah, I mean, Draymond Green's behavior was outrageous. And so they haven't announced a suspension yet, correct?
Mm-hmm. No, right, not yet.
They didn't say what he's going to get. All right, you figure between 5 and 10 games. But, you know, Klay Thompson just isn't the same player anymore. Steph is still Steph. But I think it all goes back to, you know, when they were in the throes of being like this championship contender, they had high draft picks, and they missed on those picks. You know, they certainly missed on James Wiseman. Now the jury is still out on a guy like Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody. But, you know, I think off the top of my head, they had a chance to draft LaMelo Ball, maybe even Franz Wagner, and think about how they could have changed things. And, you know, look no further than the Detroit Pistons. You know, when they were, you know, making the conference finals every year, and they made a couple of finals and they won a championship, they were lucky enough to draft second one year. And instead of taking Dwayne Wade or Carmelo Anthony or Chris Bosh, they took Darko Milicic. So when they really had a chance to solidify themselves, they missed, and they missed big with that pick. And when you miss big with high draft picks, it's hard to overcome that. You know, look at the Sacramento Kings. They just ended last year the longest playoff drought in the NBA, and one of the reasons was they were going into the lottery every year, but they weren't hitting right. You've got to be able to hit the picks. So when it's funny because the Warriors built their team around draft picks. Steph Curry in the lottery, Klay Thompson in the lottery, and then they made a great pick by taking Draymond Green in the second round. So that was the foundation of their championship teams. They used the draft. And really, you can make the case what's breaking this, you know, great run apart is that they didn't hit it in the draft, and that's always a problem.
Last one for you, Frank, and circling back to the NFL to finish here, do you see the same sort of thing happening a little bit with the Kansas City Chiefs? Like, not to say Patrick Mahomes is anything lesser than, but I guess he's playing the Steph Curry role here, and maybe Kelsey's a little bit worse, and maybe the defense has, you know, it's been pretty good, but, you know, if you've lost some talent all over the field, if you're the Kansas City Chiefs over time here, and now they're feeling it, and now they're not seemingly dealing with it the right way. Do you see some of the same things with the Warriors right now happening with the Chiefs, or can you forecast that to come with the Chiefs here?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I look at San Francisco playing their skill positions with George Kittle and Deebo Samuel, I think, is outstanding, and Christian McCaffrey. They have great skill players, which helps the quarterback. But I still think it's a quarterback league. I mean, Tom Brady won a lot of Super Bowls without having all-world receivers. I get it. He did have Rob Gronkowski. But I just think that Mahomes is so good. You know, they did win last year without Tyreek Hill. I just think as long as you could put an offensive line around Mahomes and protect him, you're always going to be a tough team. For my money, he's the best player in the league. He's the most valuable player in the league. Doesn't mean he's going to be MVP. I just think he's the best player. But, you know, you got to figure out a way to keep him healthy, keep him upright, and you'll always have a chance. He's that good. Now, I hated what happened the other day against Buffalo. His antics after the game, I thought, were embarrassing, especially for a quarterback of his stature and status to behave like that. I mean, come on. You know, mean, the Kansas City Chiefs, God bless them, they've gotten a lot of calls over the years. The Buffalo Bills never get any calls. And by the way, the call was the right call by the referee, which made it even more bizarre that Patrick Mahomes lashed out like that. But to your point, maybe that's he's showing a little frustration there. But I guess long story short, I'll always have faith in them because, for me, that's the best player in the league. And you know what? You still got to knock him out of the playoffs. Now, he's never played a road playoff game, which speaks to his greatness. So we'll see this year if they don't have a good enough record and they got to win a couple of road playoff games, how it works out for them.
Yeah, it'd be easier to write them off if there was like a truly dominant team in the AFC, but they're kind of all bunched together, and it gives hope to a team like the Buffalo Bills, but also gives reason to believe that, yeah, if push comes to shove, coin flip game, that Patrick Mahomes may end up just winning it once again. We appreciate you coming on, Frank. Enjoy the Suns and Nets tonight, and yeah, we'll do this again soon.
Good talking to you guys. I'll see you.
That's Frank Isola.
You are big on the Bills making a push here. Do you want to publicly state that, or what?
You were the biggest Bills fan last year. You kind of got a little, I don't know what happened. You lost it a little bit.
Yeah, I've been hurt too many times.
Listen, I jumped on the Bills. I wanted to make it a team bet. Everybody works on the show. Bet the Buffalo Bills. It's wide open. Now the numbers improved. If they beat Dallas, we are in the driver's seat.
I just want to sit.
But you didn't want to do it.
As a passenger, watch you go on this journey.
So now I'm the big Bills fan this season.
No, I'm still a fan, but I just can't afford to lose any more money on them.
Okay. I mean, you're hitting plus money. Bet Rivers all the time. What's going on?
Yeah, that's true, actually. Well, we got to hit a couple more. Some cool news out of Team Canada. Fraser Minton and Easton Cowan, your Maple Leafs prospects, have made the team for the World Juniors upcoming. It's been a while since a Maple Leaf made a World Juniors roster. It's just around the corner, but great to see those two kids get an opportunity to play for Team Canada at one of the most fun and enjoyable tournaments that we get to see.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Easton Cowan's rise, continues, I suppose. Like, yeah, I know, surprise first round pick. And I guess that puts you in Team Canada's radar for sure. But yeah, I don't know, without maybe that camp with the Maple Leafs where he really, really impressed everyone. Maybe that helped him get on the radar. Maybe he's just having a great season, which he is with the London Knights. But yeah, it'll be cool watching Easton Cowan and Fraser Minton's, you know, jumping around a bit in those in the WHL, moving from team to team. But yeah, they can, be roommates, and they'll give Leaf fans reason to watch the tournament for sure.
First Maple Leaf skaters since Mitch Marner and Travis Dermott in 2016.
Really?
Yeah.
On Team Canada?
Yep.
Wow.
Ian Scott, the goaltender, was in 2019, but no longer plays.
That's surprising. So it'll be cool.
We had a quick conversation with Jeff Merrick about the changes with the All-Star game, but we wanted to circle back about that because it is really cool and I'm pretty excited about it. So the All-Star game skills competition part of it, so the All-Star competition has changed, and I think it's a good opportunity for the NHL to be cool, to be different, to do something like the NBA in-season tournament that just happened. They'll have those 8 different competitions. Only 12 people will participate in them. 8 will be chosen from the pool, and then fans get to vote 4 of them in. And so there's 8 different events. Can I read them to you and you tell me what your top 3 would be?
Okay.
As a player yourself.
Why don't we give your top 3?
For the Swinging Ducks.
Wow.
Who would you be?
Swinging Ducks made Sportsnet. There you go.
Who would be, like, where would you be voted on first? So there's the fastest skater, the hardest shot, stick handling, one-timers. I'm definitely not on that one. Mm. Passing challenge, accuracy shooting, shootout, and an obstacle course. So those are your top 8, your only 8 options. Where are you putting your name in first? Because this little tidbit of it is that you get to choose which of the ones you want to compete in.
Which is interesting, right? Because, like,
strategy.
We were talking about if McDavid obviously would want to do fastest skater, will anyone else want to do that and compete with him?
Okay, so
I'm not really sure. Fastest skater, passing.
You think you're the fastest skater?
I can't do the other things.
Oh, I'm telling you, I'm
Noah Gregor. He would be in the fastest skater.
Okay.
So where would you be?
I'm definitely in the passing challenge. I'm all about the playmaker, give the puck to the goal scorers. I would absolutely love to do the obstacle course.
That, to me, the unknown there would be my third.
It would be so much fun. Because
so we'll go ahead.
You also can be like mid. You don't have to just be like the best at something. If you're just decent at everything, you'd be good at the obstacle course.
Okay. You got one more.
I don't even want to be on the ice near the one-timers or the hardest shot. I would fastest skate. I would race you, Justin.
Let's do it. Let's set it up.
I think we're onto something.
Let's set it up.
NHL, if you're listening, Justin and I will do like, we'll run through everything and make sure it works first. We'll be here.
Okay. I think we might be able to arrange that.
Let's make it happen. We'll take a quick break. Smith and Jones will join us from Scotiabank Arena, head of Raptors and Hawks. That's next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.